All right, everyone, thank you for coming. My name is Rebecca Lehman. I am the Associates Program Director for the Environmental Law Institute. And I'm very pleased to present the final session in our summer school series, session number 7. And this series has been co-sponsored by the DC Bar's Energy, Environment, and Natural Resources section. This session today is Climate Change and Introduction. And now I would like to introduce our distinguished panelists. We have David Doniger. He is the Policy Director of the Natural Resources Defense Council's Climate Center, and he's NRDC's Chief Global Warming Lawyer. He rejoined NRDC in March 2001 after serving for 8 years in the Clinton administration, where he was Director of Climate Change Policy at the EPA, and before that, counsel to the head of EPA's Clean Air Program. He also spent a year at the Council on Environmental Quality, and he started at NRDC in 1978, where he spent 14 years working on clean air issues and was working on the Montreal Protocol and the Clean Air Act amendments of 1990.
I worked a year at the Environmental Law Institute back in the beginning, 1978.
Wow. There you go. An alum.
And the other speaker is Patrick Traylor. He is a partner at Hogan Lovells here in Washington, D.C., and he practices in the area of environmental law. His focus areas are energy infrastructure development and operation, Clean Air Act compliance, litigation under programs including the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Pipeline Safety Act, CERCLA, and the Endangered Species Act, and carbon trading, where he has assisted clients with Kyoto Protocol-related project finance transactions since November 2004, and he's developed one of the United States' leading transactional climate change practices. So welcome. Thank you.
Great. Good to see you all. Welcome, and thanks for having us here, I guess, in this last installment of summer school. Like, is it called summer school or brown bag? What's it called? I forgot what it is. So, yeah. When we release you today, you can all be done with summer school and go back to your normal lives. We thought we might mix up this last discussion a little bit. I came earlier this summer, like I have for many years, and I stand up here for about 2.5 hours and put you through about 40 slides on the Clean Air Act. I try to make it fun and interesting, but we tried to do something a little bit different. You rolled your eyes. I saw that. It was a rolling of the eyes in the back when I mentioned interesting Clean Air Act. That's okay. We thought we'd do it a little bit differently today. We thought we'd have a panel discussion that is heavily reliant on Q&A, right? A lot of participation from the folks that are online who will be sending us email questions, and also from you here in the room. So we'll provide a little bit of the grist, and you'll help us mill it. I assume that most of you have more than a passing familiarity with the issue of climate change, and because you are here in Washington, at least this summer, have been keeping up at least a little bit with the puts and the takes on the Hill, and perhaps even at EPA, and so on and so forth. So what we don't intend to do today is give a detailed overview of the EPA regulations, or a detailed overview of what might be in, you know, House bills or in Senate bills or that kind of thing. I assume that most of you have some familiarity with what's been going on. What we'd like to do instead is sort of paint broad brush policy strokes, talk about what's been going on in terms of strategies and sort of perspectives and goals, and then sort of lay that out a little bit for you in a variety of fields, which David will go over and describe in more detail, and then calling you then, you know, to ask questions that occur to you as we're going over those sort of goals and policies, objectives, and strategies of both the NGO community, sort of sitting, you know, here, David, and also I represent primarily companies. So while I don't really, you know, describe myself as sort of an industry lawyer, as that might sort of traditionally be viewed, I do have, you know, mostly commercial clients, and so I do understand their interests quite well. So I think between the two of us, you ought to be able to get a fairly thorough view of what's going on in terms of the climate change debate here in Washington. Does that make sense, everybody? So this will be no fun if you don't have questions. So begin now to formulate your questions. I know the first one is always the most difficult. So think about it now. Be the first to put your hand up, break the ice for us, and we'll be off. We'll wrap this thing up around 2 o'clock. I will say that Dave needs to leave at 1:30, so he'll slip out at 1:30, and you'll be left to my tender mercies for the last half hour or so of the panel discussion. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to you.
Well, thanks. It's fun to come back to ELI every once in a while and participate in a lunch like this. So thanks for inviting me. Worried about NRDC. NRDC was founded 40 years ago, in 1970, coincident with the Clean Air Act being enacted 40 years ago. And I've worked there since 1978 with a 8-year sabbatical to work in the mostly at the EPA. I started out on you know, local and city scale, regional scale, clean air problems, smog problems, toxic air pollutant problems, but I gravitated to working on first protecting the ozone layer, which is done through an international treaty and through the Clean Air Act, and then trying to protect the climate on the same model. I guess I'd like to focus on really our strategy for the last 10 years. At the beginning of this decade, of course, the Bush administration replaced the Clinton administration. The future of the Kyoto Protocol took a very dark turn. The administration walked away from it. The new president walked away from a campaign commitment to favor the enactment of a four pollutant approach to power plant regulation, which would have included carbon pollution. And in addition, all in the space of the first few months, the Bush administration said that they would not use the Clean Air Act, for which there was a petition pending at EPA at the time to regulate carbon dioxide, other greenhouse gases. And the general counsel had issued, when I was there in 1998 or so, a pretty straightforward interpretation of the Clean Air Act, that carbon dioxide met all the definitions of an air pollutant, and if it were dangerous, if it were determined to be dangerous to health or the environment, then the Clean Air Act provided the authority to issue standards and reduce emissions. So that's where we started. I went back to work at NRDC in what we called our Climate Center, and we followed a multifaceted strategy to try to build a pathway to curb carbon pollution. Now, a lot of it's involved not just NRDC, but the entire environmental community and even a much broader set of allies and labor and veterans and religious and many other communities to build a broader alliance calling attention to the dangers of climate change and the opportunity of clean energy oriented development and the dangers of being dependent on oil and other fossil fuels. And so growing this constituency has been an important part of our strategy, although campaign work per se is not my my forte. So my forte has been to work in several different channels, supporting a team of NRDC people working at different leadership states in the Northeast and in California and other places to develop state level programs, the Clean Car Program and the state cap and trade programs. We've worked in litigation that with states and with a coalition of environmentalists that ultimately resulted in the Massachusetts versus EPA Supreme Court decision in 2007, which rebuffed the Bush administration's position on the Clean Air Act and held that really very much like the 1998 General Counsel's opinion that CO2 is an air pollutant and must be regulated if EPA determines that it's dangerous. And the court overturned the Bush administration's denial of the petition, because it was based on illegitimate, illegal factors, and ordered the agency to go back and do it again. So we followed the litigation track, and both of us will have more to say about where the EPA pathway has led and will lead, could lead. And we work as well on what you might call a completely non-statutory pathway. There's a nuisance case. There's several of them, but one in particular that NRDC has worked on is Connecticut versus American Electric Power, in which eight states and the city of New York and two land trusts we help represent sued the five power companies with the largest CO2 emissions on a theory of interstate pollution causing a public nuisance under federal common law. And we won that case last fall in the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. Right now, the power companies were expecting them to seek certiorari from the Supreme Court next month. And then, of course, the main track has been to try to get new legislation. With the coming of the Obama administration, the coming of a Democratic Congress in 2006, and then the Obama administration in 2008, hopes were high. The House acted really quite quickly to pass legislation by the end of June last year. The Senate has bogged down, and for the moment at least stalled in the effort to pass even a partial, even legislation that would cover a part of the economy, namely the utilities. It's a huge disappointment. We're still, you know, looking for ways to revive a legislative opportunity even this year, and certainly focusing forward. But we're also continuing to pursue those other pathways, the state level pathway, the EPA Clean Air Act pathway, and the nuisance law pathway, in addition to continuing to build a political constituency to come to grips with global warming. Sometimes it's this shock of the bad news that the Senate is going to, you know, fail that brings the attention of media, brings the attention of people who sort of don't think about this much. And I think there's been a slap in the face or a bucket of cold water, but maybe it was a bucket of hot water that was thrown on people to realize, my God, that this Congress is actually not likely now to do anything. Now, where does that leave us? So I could go many ways with this. So there's the international path as well. The Kyoto Agreement did come into play, but it needs, we need a new agreement, not only because the Kyoto Agreement covers only the years through 2012, but because it doesn't cover major developing countries. And over the past several years, for autonomous reasons in places like China, India, Brazil, South Korea, Mexico, South Africa, there's been huge evolution in thinking in those countries, and a perception of opportunity in the clean energy economy, especially in China, and a perception of self-interest and responsibility that have caused these countries to make, mostly during the 2009 calendar year in the run-up to the Copenhagen meeting, a series of very credible commitments to action on their own, which have broken out of the mold this is a developed country's responsibility only, and we don't have any responsibilities, and we're not going to do anything. At the same time, they're looking to the United States now with dismay for leadership, for us to, or even partnership, for us to be doing domestically things to pull our own weight, bear our own responsibility. And from our point of view, to seize our own opportunities, because there's a very potent case to be made that China and some other fast-growing economies are winning the race for the clean energy technologies, clean energy economy, production of windmills and many other technologies that we are just not investing in, and we're not creating the domestic conditions to focus private investment in those fields. I think in the short run, very short run, next couple of weeks and months, one of our priorities is to make sure that the Congress, having failed, if it continues to fail to move forward, that damn well does not move backwards and suspend or delay or repeal Clean Air Act authority that's so hard, that's been so long part of the law. It goes back to 1970 and so hard fought to get us where we are now. I guess a couple of words about this chart. I had fun with this chart because I've used it before, because I tried to combine like 40 slides into one. Right? And I've seen some crazy, crazy slides about how the Clean Air Act, how greenhouse gases might be regulated under the Clean Air Act. There's a fellow at Resources for the Future who has a paper with some slides, and you are left bewildered. So I tried to show all of them, you know, if any of you used to watch the Rocky and Bullwinkle shows, Bullwinkle would say all the credits, all on the city beauty card, and then it would unfold and have 40 different layers of the card underneath. But I tried here to outline the major things that are going on, the major pathways for using the Clean Air Act that are in play. And the stuff that is shaded or green in my copy, maybe a little bit, is there anything that's gray? Mm-hmm. It all washed out? Okay, well, let me hold this up. So the green shows the things that are done. The Supreme Court decision, the endangerment determination was made in December 2009. And then on the left side is a track relating to mobile sources, motor vehicles, where in the course of the last year, the Obama administration has brokered an agreement, which I call the Clean Car Peace Treaty, that found a way to achieve nationwide the California level of emissions controls for new vehicles, but in a format that the automakers prefer because it's a national system that jives pretty well with the CAFE system. And it constructs some averaging and some other details in ways that are more congenial to them, but produces the environmental results of the California standards as if they applied nationwide. Huge environmental victory for California and for us. We had to fight for 4 years to and win lawsuits brought by the auto companies to try to establish the California program and the Vermont program, other states' programs were preempted, and we won all those cases. And the auto companies basically, at the beginning of the Obama administration, needing some financial help as well, were of a mind to settle on a national program that delivered these results. And then the state programs are still in the books, but they basically are in abeyance, and that the states have agreed to accept the national standards, compliance with the national standards as effective compliance with their state standards. So everything's gotten very simple for the auto companies. They're subject to three regimes, including CAFE, but one code of conduct, and they like that. And the Obama administration has directed EPA and the Transportation Department to wind it up and do it again for a second set of years running out to 2025. And to do similar things for heavy-duty trucks. All that is with the support of the relevant industries, states, unions, environmentalists, and it's a big success story. The middle column is a set of similar things that ought to happen on the stationary source side. Under Section 111 of the Clean Air Act, which authorizes action both to set new source performance standards and also existing source performance standards. And I won't explain all that, but this is something that we hope to see happen with respect to power plants, refineries, half a dozen other categories of industry which are responsible for most of the industrial emissions. Power plants are responsible for about 33% of U.S. greenhouse gas emissions, and industry, big industrial facilities that burn fuels or release other compounds are responsible for another, I think it is about 15%. Then there's a lot of hubbub about something called new source review legislation that would, one way or another, block this pathway, these pathways. The Murkowski resolution of disapproval under the Congressional Review Act. This is a procedure where you can deactivate any regulatory action by a resolution passed by both houses of Congress and signed by the president. It's actually been used only once, and that is to, at the beginning of the Bush administration, to cancel the Clinton administration's ergonomic standards in the workplace. Murkowski's resolution to cancel the endangerment determination failed 47-53. I still am shocked, this is a larger point we might discuss, at the irresponsibility of all 41 Republicans voting in lockstep to repeal a determination on the science. And even knowing that if they succeeded, they would take down the Clean Car Peace Treaty, because you can't issue the car standards without the endangerment determination. And then there were six extraordinarily disappointing Democratic votes there too. But 47-53, it lost. And Rockefeller has a bill which would cancel EPA's stationary source powers. There has been at least one, well, there's been one attempt to attach a funding rider in the House last week that failed on a 7-7 vote in a subcommittee. And I don't think we've seen the end of this. Now, I've written a blog post in which I suggest that there will be an especially hot place in the hell of global warming for senators who not only want to take on the responsibility to pass a new law, but would actually seek to block any action under the law we had on the books for 40 years. A good place to stop, perhaps, and you can pick up from here.
Good overview. So maybe we can sort of draw out of that just a couple of have some sandwich, a few compartments of thought that we could focus on. The first is domestic legislation. So David's spoken a good amount about the strategy sort of that led into legislation, the puts and the takes, and the past successes, the past losses, and the future risks, sort of all together there. We talked a little bit about international prospects, so the second category of discussion, international prospects, particularly with Kyoto and what I describe as the son of the Kyoto Protocol, which should be in place by 2013 if it's going to be in place. A little bit about regional and state efforts, mobile source side, as well as stationary source side. Litigation is the kind of the fourth bin, litigation, ongoing, nuisance litigation, so on and so forth. And the fifth would be what's going on at EPA. So sort of you think about five different categories of thought, I think that David framed up for us very nicely. That might sort of inform us as we go on in the conversation. I guess before we get started, though, kind of getting into each of those bins more deeply, well, I'll just pause here. And instead of getting into the details of any of those five bins, if anyone has any general questions on strategy or comments on what David has given us so far at a high level, it might be a good idea to do that before we start drilling down into each of the five categories. So any questions so far?
Have you been thinking?
Yes, sir. First question.
Dan Cornelius, Howard Law. What do you think caused the failure of climate legislation in the Senate, and what can we learn from this experience in order to not repeat the same mistakes?
Yeah. Well, I would really like to refer everyone to a Grist column, a Grist website that Dave Roberts wrote, I believe, yesterday. And he was reacting to